What we've seen an exponential rise in when we look at the health issues that young people face are definitely around mental health, higher rates of depression and anxiety particularly. The responses to that by the health system have also been good. We now have, for example, GPs who are really well trained in how to diagnose or assess mental health disorders in young people, a better idea of the evidence of what works with treatment of those conditions. What I think we don't do so well is bring services together well so that young people don't feel like they have to keep shuffling from one place to another. So, for example, we have the National Youth Mental Health Initiative Headspace, which has opened up dozens and dozens, hundreds of services for young people, including in rural areas where it might have been harder in the past to get help. But there are some barriers to that because you can only get a certain number of sessions, for example, with a psychologist under the Medicare plans. And that might be fine for a lot of young people, but sometimes they need more than that, or sometimes they go back to a different GP and perhaps the services don't communicate well enough with each other to provide a kind of integrated service.
Why do you think you've seen a rise in mental health issues for youth over the 25-year period? Why do you think that's changed?
I think there's a lot of people asking those questions. I think it's a worldwide phenomenon. It's global. So the World Health Organization is calling, you know, depression, for example, the new epidemic, although it's not so new anymore. Here in Australia, we're recognizing it more. We're encouraging young people to talk more about their feelings and emotions. Not everyone who feels sad has depression. So sometimes there's a little bit of over-labeling, but more than that, there's a lot of under-recognition and there's still some stigma attached to it. The rise in anxiety, which is actually more prevalent than depression, is something that I think has something to do with just modern society. These are just my ideas. There's no evidence behind this necessarily, although other people are kind of talking about the fact that there's just a lot of pressure now. There's a lot of pressure to succeed academically, to work, to keep up all the time. Young people especially are connected all the time, 24/7, whether that's doing something to kind of just stress levels, you know, hormones in the body, the alertness, the sort of constant stimulation from being online. While that has a lot of benefits socially and convenience-wise for a lot of things, it perhaps is adding to the need to always be on the ball and out there. Things like, too, the cost of living, you know, the cost of finding accommodation, things like that, I think just add to a lot of stress.
In what form do you see youth calling for help?
That's something that we've been really interested in exploring in the what we call the Access 3 study. So just to give you the context, this is New South Wales health-funded research. And going back now almost 20 years, in fact, New South Wales Health funded what was called Access 1 and then Access 2. And it was a big, broad brush look at what are the barriers to healthcare for young people. So it was the first time the state had done anything like this. What's happened since then, of course, is now our generation of young people are digital natives, and we have no idea how that's impacted on the way they look for information and receive it, but also how they access services. Does it actually facilitate access or does it create barriers? But the particular focus of Access 3, unlike the earlier studies, is that we are focusing a lot on five different subgroups of young people that we are calling marginalised for different reasons. So they are Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islanders, young people of refugee or vulnerable migrant backgrounds, young people who are homeless or risk of homelessness, sexuality and or gender diverse young people, and also young people living in rural and remote parts of New South Wales. The most important outcome of this research has been to inform the new youth health policy, which will be available later this year. And it's going to, again, have a real emphasis on marginalised or vulnerable groups of young people. But most importantly, it's taught us, as health service providers and policymakers and researchers, what some of the issues are that we think really need to be addressed.
Is there kind of summation of some of those issues, like as to why you're looking at those subgroups in particular?
We chose those subgroups because they're quite visible to us who work with young people. We're really aware that they're groups that we have worked with, that we're really concerned about, and whose health we feel hasn't been adequately addressed by policy enough. These groups of young people do have more difficulty being seen or heard or accessing help for various reasons.
to insert e-health and m-health, to being electronic and mobile
yes.
health. That is something that I think more recently has been relayed to the older population yeah. in Australia.
Yeah.
When it comes to the context of youth and looking at the way E and M health can kind of make an imprint there, in what way do you see that?
Well, what we've found so far in our sort of preliminary look at the data is that every young person uses mobile technology to get information. Nearly 100%, just about, of our sample would use the internet a lot and would certainly go there first to find out what was wrong with them, if they had symptoms or had a worry or heard about something. What we were then interested in is, okay, what do you do next? Do you then diagnose yourself and not go to seek help, or does it make you more likely to go and seek help? What happens next? And what we have been finding so far is that the great majority of young people will decide that they prefer to see a real person if they feel that their symptoms or their concerns are strong enough to lead them to think they, yeah, there's something wrong. Most of them will actually then turn to a parent or a carer or someone that they know. So word of mouth, in fact, rather than looking it up online.
Do you see that there's an interesting paradox too, that because there is such a ridiculous amount of information online too,
yep.
could it also add to the anxiety amongst the youth population? They pop on their phone,
yep.
they read something
yep.
about a condition they yep. may or may not have, yep. and they're like, oh no.
Yeah, I think we certainly saw some examples of that where the more they looked, the worse it became, and they just almost seized up, you know, like this is too stressful, this is too hard. There's a kind of real diversity of reactions, I think. But the majority said, yep, we're not idiots. We can tell when something might be a bit of rubbish, and these are the kinds of sites that we trust. But they had lots of advice for those kinds of government-based websites about how hard they are to navigate and how un-youth-friendly they are. So I think we can do a lot more in that space to make things easier for young people.
The AAAH conference, youth conference, is this week.
Yep.
Why do you think that a conference like this is important today, still in 2017?
Look, I think that young people are a group, on the one hand, are full of vitality and energy and physically quite healthy. But actually, if you look over the last several decades and you look at how much medical technology especially has extended the lifespan, has improved the survival of little babies and children, has improved the management of chronic diseases in older people. When you look across the whole age range in the population, it is young people, it is that 12 to 24 age group whose health really hasn't improved in the same way. Some things have improved, but we're seeing, as I said earlier, you know, much higher rates of mental health disorders. Sexual and reproductive health is something that there is absolutely lots of very available and safe and effective technology out there to ensure that sexual and reproductive health is absolutely optimal in young people, but we know that it isn't when we look at the data. So we're really keen to see that improve.